Okay, we're going to continue with some of the thoughts we introduced yesterday. And while I was pleased with the session yesterday, I don't want to leave it necessarily where we left it. We spent a large amount of time yesterday defining what I consider to be a difficulty, but we need to discuss some ways to address that if we agree that's a difficulty. I had a very interesting session with the teens yesterday on this, and I did approach it differently with them than I did you. I didn't think the first 20 minutes of intensity was quite what I wanted to do with them, but we had more time for discussion. And I asked them the question as we got to it, is sharing the gospel difficult? And usually I have to pause and wait for a hand. This time I didn't have to pause and I didn't have to wait for a hand. There were about 10 young people who answered in unison, yes. And we spent the last 40 minutes discussing why. And I thought you might be interested in the reasons they came up with, because they're very similar to the ones you came up with. Number one, people aren't serious. Number two, we don't know enough of the answers. Number three, people are so set in their beliefs. Number four, people are just ignorant. Number five, people ask too many questions and it's frustrating. Number six, we're afraid of getting our feelings hurt. Number seven, we don't know where some of the answers are in the Bible. Number eight, we feel like we're playing tennis. We're trying to convert them, they're trying to convert us. Number 10, some people don't acknowledge the Bible is true. Number 11, sometimes it's difficult to distinguish between other denominations and the Church of Christ. And we spent the time discussing how to handle some of those things, and it was just an absolutely enjoyable session. What I want to do today is to share some ideas of maybe how we can do better. I wrote this on the board because this little tidbit has come to mean a lot for me. I read it somewhere and I can't tell you where. It's the definition of insanity. And this person said, insanity is wanting change while doing things the same. If we want some change, we can't do things the same. Because doing things the same will not produce any change. And in this particular discussion, we're talking about our relationship with the world and evangelism. I was reminded of a quote by Charles Spurgeon when he once said, I hate my eyes because they do not cry for the lost. Think about that. I hate my eyes because they do not cry for the lost. I had several comments after our session yesterday. It seemed to take some of you about an hour to form your comments, so I got most of these from noon on. And I'm going to share some of those comments back with you today and make a few comments. I'm sure I won't catch them all. One person asked me, how do we take this home with us? Well, as we discuss some of our things today, my best response to that is probably by example. If people see you having a positive influence or at least a positive effort in taking the gospel to others, that's probably the wisest and surest way to take this home. Because unless you come from a congregation that is extremely atypical, you will stand out if you initiate a personal, private effort to share the gospel on a regular basis with people. Now, you may not agree with what I just said, but at least consider it honestly. One person asked me about evangelizing to our own members, and I think that's an excellent point. Many times in the church, there are people who know enough of the gospel to obey it, but don't know as much of the gospel as they need to. So evangelism doesn't stop with baptism. One of the crucial mistakes we make in the church. Half of the Bible studies I have usually are with already converted people. Because it takes a year or two to ground these people to where they begin to feel confident. This was a comment, not a question, of someone that said we shouldn't wait for the leadership of the congregation to start this. And I fully agree. Always remember, shepherds don't produce sheep. Sheep produce sheep. Shepherds guide them. This doesn't absolve the eldership of this responsibility, because an elder is both a shepherd and a sheep. But it's his role as a sheep that produces sheep. And we're all sheep. It occurred to another person that their congregation frequently has developmental classes to teach young men how to better publicly serve, and maybe to teach young women how to learn how to teach. Has your congregation ever had an evangelistic class to teach how to evangelize? Might be something to consider. Which is more important, reading properly in the worship service or bringing souls to Christ? Well, I don't want to prioritize those. Those are both infinitely important. The concept of women and evangelism. I am a firm believer that some of the best evangelism is done by women. No question about it. We joke about women's verbosity, but women in general are more articulate, more sensitive, more empathetic, and have better command of verbal skills. Fact. And those are awfully good tools for evangelism. What are the tools for evangelism? I can only give you my opinion. The first tool you need is the Bible, and the second tool you need is a kitchen table. What little success I've had in sharing the gospel has been done around kitchen tables, not behind a pulpit. And if you get that opportunity to have a Bible study, let me highly recommend the person's, not yours, the other person's kitchen table. And I'll try to tell you a little more why as we go through this. Final thing, as an introductory note, that I'd like to ask is, I asked you to make a list yesterday. What have you done in the last 24 hours to bring those people on the list closer to God? What have you done in the last 24 hours? Well, our initial response would probably be we've been extremely busy. I was here till 3:30. Etc. That's true. And you probably haven't seen anybody on that list. But have you prayed about it? Did you pray about that list since we met last? Don't ever forget that. Don't ever forget that. Okay. I'm going to go down, and I'm going to give you some suggestions that other people and I have found sometimes helpful in this process. Because I don't think it's fair for me to make us feel poorly about something without some positive comments. Now, I firmly believe there is no hard and fast program that you can follow to evangelize. If there were, God would have given it to us. God gave us the principle to spread the gospel, and then he gave us a mind to figure out how. My personal opinion is, as long as our hows don't contradict biblical principles, then God has left us some freedom to use our minds in how to do it. We have to be careful that we do it in a biblically consistent way. And there is no single way to do it. What works for me won't necessarily work for you, and what works for me with one person won't necessarily work for me with another person. That's why I think he gave me a mind, and you too. But if we don't have and share some suggestions, we're going to just spin our wheels and never get anywhere. Marvin had a telling comment yesterday when he confessed, in a sense, that when he was in the secular workplace selling insurance, he was very organized. He had this list. He went through it. But when it comes to transferring that organization to a spiritual endeavor, it's sometimes difficult and things start to not be as neatly tied together. I don't know all of the reasons for that, but probably discipline, probably Maslow's triangle, and various other concepts account for that. I put these numbers on the board yesterday, and we didn't get to them, so I'm going to get to them right now. Mike asked what they were about. The Institute for American Church Growth did a survey of 10,000 people who had recently joined religious organizations. Now, this wasn't just Church of Christ. This was church in the broad sense. And the percents that I put on the board are the percents for the answers of what brought them to a particular religion or a church. I'm going to read them for you. 3% said they came because they had a special need. Something in their life had happened that made them feel like they had a special need. 3% just walked in the door. They wanted to go to church and they just randomly walked in one that was close. 6% said they liked the minister at that congregation, and that's what brought them initially. 1% said, we just visited and we liked the people, so we stayed. 5% said, we liked the Bible classes and the Bible study, so we stayed. 0.5% said, we attended a gospel meeting, and that got us started. 0.5%. 3% said, we liked the church programs. I don't know exactly what that means, but I can imagine the various activities. But the whole point of this survey, 79%, 7,900 people out of 10,000 said they came because a friend or relative invited us. 80% came because somebody took the time to personally invite them and guide them through the experience. What do we learn from a survey like that? What I learn is if congregations are going to grow, it will be through the individual personal efforts of people like you and me. And the converse is if they don't grow, we might need to look for the lack of those efforts. Each of us have daily contact with tens of people that need the gospel. And therein is the fertile field. How do you decide who you're going to take the gospel to? Well, just let me give you a few suggestions, not rules, but suggestions. Start with family and start with friends. Start with people you already know. And I suspect on your list that I asked you to put down yesterday, those are people you already know. If any of you have ever had to look for a job, especially not your first job right out of school, because then you don't really know how to look for a job. You just want something so you can eat. But when you get a little more mature, you go through a process called networking. And I know many of you have done that. And that means you let people know that you're looking for employment, and then all of those people can funnel opportunities back to you. I tried that at our home congregation in evangelism about a year ago. I told our group, I'd like for you people to try to think of someone you would like to study with. And then if you would like, I'll go with you to get you started. I wasn't doing that to be benevolent to them. It just allowed me to have a whole wider vista of opportunities of people I had never met. And I got opportunities to study with people I didn't even know. But they knew them. Same thing will work in your congregation, I suspect. A lot of people in your congregation would like to do it, and they're scared. And having someone go with them might help. One of the comments I got yesterday was by a brother, and he's back today. He said, I served in the war. He said, I was scared to death to go to combat. But he said, that fear is nothing compared to the fear I feel in talking to somebody about Christ. Now that's amazing. But I really respected that man's honesty. Tremendous fear that we've got to overcome. Okay. Let me move to, if you have that handout I gave you yesterday, relationships with the world, I want to make just a few comments as we go down that. Down under key steps. And again, this isn't a fail-safe way to do it. But I want you to leave with something to do. Now, whether you do it or not, I don't know. You'll need to modify this. But this is just basic, and I don't want to insult your intelligence, but I do want to go through it a little bit. First of all, you've got to make some kind of an initial contact. You've got to have contact with people that are non-believers. And I think hospitality plays a tremendous role in this. Do you have non-believers in your home? Do you have people that aren't your church family or physical family in your home? You've got to have contacts. That's why Jesus spent time with sinners and publicans. I believe if Jesus was on earth, he wouldn't be standing where I'm standing. He's not against what we're doing, but he'd be out talking to people that needed the gospel. Making contacts takes work. Neighborhood cookouts. Becoming involved in some social activities. PTA. You know, the Little League can be an evangelistic tool if you'll use it that way. It can be a terrible time drain that keeps you from the work of the Lord if you choose to use it that way. But it's how we use it. Second, get it better acquainted. Strike up the conversation. Don't force the relationship. I happen to think that short, frequent contacts are better than long, boring contacts. And as likable as most of us are, we're taken better in short dosages than large dosages, at least initially. Listen to other people. If you want to know how well your conversation is going, just monitor how much talking you're doing and how much talking they're doing. And in their minds, the conversation is infinitely better the more talking they do. Listen. Listen. I'm going through these first four steps rather quickly because I think on your list you're probably already through them. Look for ways to serve them. Offer to keep the kids. Mow the grass when they're gone. New people move into your neighborhood. Don't draw the blinds and hope they don't see you're there. Go over and meet them. Tremendous opportunities when people move. When people move, they've automatically been uprooted, especially if they've moved from one town to another. What better time you're going to have to maybe invite them to your church home. Whenever there's an upheaval in a person's life, it's a tremendous evangelistic opportunity. strike up a friendship. Strike up a friendship. You know, it's amazing that the closer our neighbors are, the less we know them. People used to know their neighbors when they lived a mile or two apart on the farm. Now you can go into an apartment complex and apartment 1A doesn't know the people in apartment 1B. And sometimes we'll look out the window to make sure the people in apartment 1B aren't outside before they go outside because they might accidentally run into them. Now I'm being a little facetious, but I'm not being very facetious. And it does take work. But what I want to deal with a little bit more are steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. And I have, there's a 4-page discussion of these last 4 steps, and I had about 12 extra copies with me, and I put them down here. At the end, if you'd like a copy of that, feel free to take it. Behind here, I put a copy and just wrote master over it, and I'll leave it back here. So if those are all gone and you want to make a copy on the Xerox machine, I'm sure that'd be okay. I don't know how many people want it. I don't know how beneficial it would be to you. It's been helpful for me. But when we get to step number 5, we begin to get to the meat. We're past that relational shallow stage, and we're starting nowing to prepare to share the gospel. How do you share your faith? At this point, you have some kind of a friendship, may not be it deep, but a friendship or a relationship with the person. And it's now time, I would say, and I believe, to at least let that person in some way know that you have strong religious affiliation. And you don't have to do that by saying, I belong to the Church of Christ and I'm here to save your soul. That'd probably be a pretty poor choice of doing it. But there are so many comfortable ways of doing this. A phrase like, when something comes up in this person's life, like, I'll be praying for you. You know what that tells that person? It tells them you're spiritual. It tells them you believe God has a great role to play in our life. And just a benign statement like, I'll be praying for you, does a tremendous amount to open that door to see what kind of reaction that person will have. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, ask for wisdom, prayer, not only for that person, but for you to do it. Suggestions. In your daily conversations, just interject little things about your belief in God. Not preaching. You're at the coffee pot at work. A little conversation can come up. You know, that's probably one of the reasons that sometimes people who do full-time church work have such a difficult time doing this, because they sometimes restrict their contacts outside of the body. When it's appropriate, interject phrases like, praise the Lord, or give God the glory. That tells people a lot. So that if they want to know more, they know that you may be a resource. I think that's an easy step. Who here can't do that? Who can't say something like that to someone? But you're going to have to remind yourself to do it. You're going to have to remind ourselves to do it. Step number 6, witnessing of the body. What this has to do with is the concept of showing them that there are other Christians around. And by that we mean, let's say I'm working with somebody, and I might invite them over for a barbecue. But I'll go ahead and invite Bob and Marge over. Not because we're going to gang up, just let them meet some other people. Find out we're human beings and not a bunch of cultists that are going to drag them away from all reality. You know, many people think that about the church. Especially the Church of Christ, partly because of the Boston movement and partly because of our concept of being a little anti in some areas, and I'm with you on that. We had a young teenage girl whose parents forbid her to come to our congregation after 3 times because they thought we were a cult. And we never persuaded. It was one of Amber's friends can't remember her first name, but it was one of Amber's friends. They were convinced we were a cult. They've got to get to know us. And then we come to beginning to expose and study the gospel. Now, I want you to notice that we're already to step 7 and we haven't opened the Bible yet. And I don't apologize that for that one bit. I believe in some way you've got to get through these first steps before, because if you go in and say, here it is, and haven't established that relationship, you're going to fail far more often than you succeed. I wouldn't listen to you. I've got to trust you before I'll listen to you. What's that old saying? They've got to know how much we care before they care how much we know. Only one that cares how much we know is us. And if a Bible study is an ego trip for you so you can show someone else how much you know, then you're in bad shape. And we don't do that consciously, but we can sure do that unconsciously. You know, little things. I have come to the conclusion, well, many times when we're studying a passage, and I might start with the book of Mark, because Mark's a good place to start because it's got the whole plan of salvation, but it's short. You can get through it in less than a year, and it moves, and that helps. But I used to say, well, now let's turn over to Romans 3 and 2, and then let's go to Galatians 14. No, wouldn't be 14. Galatians 6 and 14. And then let's go, you know, that I found that doesn't work. You know why? It embarrasses them every time I ask them to turn to a book because they don't know where it is. It absolutely does. Now, I may reference those things, but I have gotten in the habit, depending upon where they are, to be very careful, because if you make them feel inadequate, you're absolutely right scripturally, you're absolutely right doctrinally, but I don't want to come and spend an hour so you can make me feel bad. You've got to be careful. I use the King James Version. I prefer the King James Version. I've never used the NIV from the pulpit. I own them for my study, but they're not my first choice. But when I have someone that has never read the Scriptures, I recommend a translation like that. Because I forget how hard the beseeches and the begottens and the thous are. They make absolutely no sense to someone that's never studied the gospel. And I want them to feel comfortable. What I bought was a parallel that has King James and NIV. I take that on my Bible study, so I'll read in the NIV. And then I'll read the King James so I'll know what the NIV said, because I'm so King James oriented. I got to have those begots and begottens to remember the verse. Just be empathetic. So now we're to the concept of exposing and starting that study. Expose them clearly. Now, there are some aids available. I didn't bring them, and I probably should. There's an eight-section series of correspondence courses that are very good, and some of you have seen them. I think they're by John Hunt. Don't quote me on that. You can get them from Gospel Advocate and various things. They're only a quarter apiece. We bought 150 sets of those for our congregation, and we just have them there, and people come, and it takes you all the way through the Bible. But if you go through those in 8 sessions, you've got the plan of salvation. The person knows what they need to be saved. I find that to be somewhat helpful, and your congregation might want to get some of those. I've had other studies where I thought that was the wrong way to go, because the person has been stung by people that come in with all these outside things, and all they want to do is open up the Bible and study it and it alone. And when that's the way the person is, that's what I want to do. Don't take your concordance, your Lexington, and your Zurz commentary with you when you go to study with people. Because we're telling them, we follow the Bible and the Bible alone, and then I got a stack of books 12 feet high. Come on, get real. Now, I've got those books, and they stack 12 feet high, and I use them. I'm not against them. I'm just saying we've got to show when they don't yet understand how to use those things. Don't try to convert someone to the church. Convert them to Christ. After you've converted them to Christ, then you can begin to explain to them why you've chosen the Church of Christ. But don't convert them to the church. Personal opinion, more times than not, inviting them to church before you've had quite a bit of time to study with them is a mistake. They won't understand what's going on. The class will be way over their head. They'll feel inadequate, and the foundation needs to be laid. Now, if they come, that's fine. Don't say, no, don't go away. We haven't studied long enough. But don't get in a hurry to invite them to church. Get in a hurry to convert them to Christ. Remember Priscilla and Aquila in Acts chapter 18? They took them away and gave them the more perfect salvation. An easy way for some of you ladies to get other ladies to study with you is after you've gotten to this point, and I'm just going to pick a couple of names, Melda might say to someone she knows, well, Angie and I are going to get together and study Tuesday. Would you like to join us? That's all it takes. The person may not come, but that's a non-threatening way. As opposed to the attitude, Angie and I are trying to save some lost people. Would you like to be our first one? Now, I overemphasize that, but we can sure display that arrogant attitude, can't we? And you wouldn't come to that. I wouldn't come to that. And I'd be embarrassed to say anything close to that. What I usually do when we have visitors at our congregation, I let them come two or three times, and about the third time, I or Gerald or one of the other brothers will simply go up to them and say, we've been very pleased to see you. We know that you may have some questions about some of the things you've seen and heard, and if you would ever like to sit down and visit with us one-on-one about some of those questions, you just let us know. And 9 times out of 10, they will. And our foot's in the door. But we've positioned it such, and not manipulative, such that we just want to serve them. We don't want to inundate them. We don't want to brainwash them. We just want to serve them. Oh, it's so easy and it's so hard. Okay, the last one is the invitation, and then I'm going to open it up for comments. In the sales game, they call this asking for the order. And I don't think that's a bad phrase, although this is not manipulation, but there is some salesmanship. We're trying to present the gospel in its most positive light to these people so they'll want it. One of the things I believe, and this happens after you've studied with them for a while, the invitation includes either in then inviting them to church, but specifically what I have in mind here is the invitation to accept Jesus Christ. I find myself and many of my brothers are very hesitant to ask if they would like to accept the Lord because we're again afraid they might say no. And that's a rejection. We take it as a rejection. Let me give you just a few phrases that I found helpful to get me over that hump. We'll be studying along, and maybe we've just concluded a session on baptism. Maybe it was Acts chapter 2 or another one in the gospel. You might say something like, does that make sense to you? Well, they're going to say yes or no. If they say no, then ask them why not. And then you've got another opportunity to teach. If they say yes, then you've got a person in that case who says, I understand this teaching on baptism and it makes sense to me. Man, that's called getting real close. Now, this is a delicate time because you don't want to push someone. And any of you that have studied with people in the Bible, you know there's times when if you pushed a little harder, you could have gotten them to say yes. And I don't want to push anybody to accepting the gospel. They got to accept it because they want to. And I've had to restrain myself many times. I'm going to confess, there are times when I get so frustrated, I want to come across that kitchen table and just go like this and say, what do we need? And I haven't done that yet. I doubt it would work. But you do have those feelings. I studied with a man for 2 years, and he never disagreed with me on a single point. And he's still not a Christian. But God and him are having to work on that. So don't get frustrated. Another one is there anything we have said you don't understand? You know, you're trying to get them to tell you what they don't understand so you can then go back and explain it. Just because you understand it doesn't mean they do. I like this one. Have we been Have I been teaching you anything other than what the Bible teaches? Now, if he says yes to that, or she, then again, you're that close. Would you like to obey the gospel and be baptized for the remission of your sins? Now, that's when you finally get there. But there are times when you need to ask that. And always remember to follow up with Bible study after they've accepted. Now, what I've tried to do, and I talked longer today than I wanted, is to at least after today, we've got a list. And we've got some things to consider doing. Take the list. Develop a system. Not everyone on that list is going to positively respond, and you're going to have to put others on the list and take those off. But have a list. Remember that Nike commercial? Just do it. That's the way it ends. And I think that's evangelism. Just do it. The talent to bring people to Christ assembled in this auditorium is astronomical. I don't see a single person here that couldn't convert someone to Christ or share the gospel. Eloquently. Not just adequately, eloquently. Just do it. And once you've been blessed by God to participate in this process once, it is the sweetest taste you have ever tasted, and you will be addicted for the rest of your life. And it is a great addiction. I can't tell you what it feels, I can't express to you what it feels like to observe the baptism of someone the Lord allowed you to be party to in bringing them to the gospel. And if you've never felt that, I have a little tinge of sorrow for you, but I know you can. Okay, let me stop. We've got 10 minutes. If you would have any questions or comments, we'll consider them at this time. On anything we've covered over these 2 days, we're going to not dwell on it tomorrow. Michael.
I said this, I have a couple of comments. I said this to you yesterday, and I think it's worth saying in front of everyone, and I hope you will share this with the young people. You mentioned people that move in, how that can be a tremendous opportunity because there's already some changes in their life. Mm-hmm. But I think that's very true also of young people, college age, high school age. These folks are going through a lot of changes, and our young people can be very effective with them. I know one of the more effective times I had in sharing the gospel with others was when I was in high school and college age. And I'm noticing Rachel is in a similar situation, my daughter Rachel, being able to reach some of her friends mm-hmm. in high school. And I think the high school students that were downstairs, I mean, they came up with similar reasons for not doing it. They need to be encouraged that there are some tremendous opportunities for them there.
Excellent point. I'd only amplify that those opportunities are for all of us, but they are for them too. And I think those young people may be a little more willing to do it. They're not as chicken as we are. Maybe they haven't been knocked down as many times, but they don't have the maturity we have to bring to it.
My second comment is, as you were going through that, reading through their lists, one thing that seemed to be slightly different was several times it seemed to come up that they don't seem to feel comfortable in their knowledge of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a negative reflection on us.
Well, it may be, but I think that may be an opportunity. Maybe occasionally with our young people in our congregations, rather than saying, well, let's study Acts, let's study questions that come up that you have trouble answering. Now, as teachers, it's easier to study Acts than to study questions that come up that we have trouble answering. But I think that's real good. That's what we did yesterday. And with that group downstairs, the more they talk, the better I like it. And I think the better they like it. John.
It's kind of an addendum to Mike's comments. Brother Dan Huff and I have had a certain amount of success in the college campus in Springfield, and it comes from something that you don't usually have success with in the quote-unquote adult world, and it's kind of canvassing. We'll just go on the campus, walk around and meet people and talk to them, and a lot of the things you were talking about building up to it, maybe it's just a thing, isolated to people of that age, but you really don't have to build up to it with college students. One of the most successful questions I've had is, are you saved?
Mm-hmm.
No. Do you want to be? Well, I never thought about it. And suddenly we've got a study. I mean, less than 10 people, we've had two studies.
Yeah.
It's just pretty easy there.
I think that's a valid point. And I'm not sure that maybe we can be more direct than I even portrayed with some of the adults. Some of you, very few of you know the Kirksville, Missouri congregation. But that congregation, and I mean this in all kindness, was on the decline. I don't want to say it was dying, but it was dying. And about 4 or 5 years ago, a young man in his 30s and his wife, his name's Barry Pointer, moved in there. Very energetic. He's a professor at Kirksville University, or Truman State, whatever. They have a study group on the campus, and that congregation has probably almost doubled in the last 4 years. But not only has it almost doubled, their average age has gone from about 69 to probably 39. One or two people dedicated and committed who won't take no for an answer and get discouraged can make a difference. That's what I'm telling you. David?
Two comments. One, being as tiny as we are, one of the things we've tried to do is concentrate on the kids. And so our midweek service, we even call it Kids Night. And it's amazing how the kids will invite their friends from school to come and be there. And we've had just some glorious meetings, okay, with total strangers who came in as the friends of our kids. And I totally agree with you. It's just a phenomenal way for them to get involved. And then the other issue that I think we need to take advantage of is an example we're seeing right now. Shannon Helton is here with us for this two-week meeting. She wants to be with William, and William's at church, so she's at church. And she's learning a lot as we go through this process and asking lots of questions, but it's just a natural opportunity to work with people to start studying those things.
Okay. Very good comment. And I've noticed that. And is she a member? But she's made several comments in the class downstairs, so it appears to be some soaking in. This is Tom Woody.
The 14th chapter of 1 Corinthians talks about how in our assemblies we may have the unlearned or unbelievers come in. And for that reason, I think we should be sure that we are conducting ourselves the right way in our assemblies. That way I don't think we'll have to be ashamed of our brethren or of the assembly and be able to use it as an opportunity to help those who are trying to learn.
Excellent comment, and let me put a couple of addendums. Each congregation chooses how they want to do things on Sunday morning, but our approach, and it may not be right, is that we, on our Sunday morning adult class, are always studying something in the New Testament pertaining to Jesus and the plan of salvation. If we want to study Ezekiel or Revelation, we defer that to one of our other services. And we as members get a lot out of those studies. We just went through the Sermon on the Mount, but we did it so that when visitors are there, it's something relevant for them. I mean, when you're starting down here, the fact that the Babylonians came in and took Jerusalem in 605 or 6 really isn't very meaningful to you. And I suspect you can be saved if you don't know that date. So keep that in mind. We even assign Sunday morning sermon topics for that very same reason. I thought I saw another hand somewhere. Charles?
I think the point where it talks about that they'll know us by our love one for another ties in with your service thing. There's a lot of people that have no clue as to what even a nucleus family is like, and to have access to a family like this is absolutely incredible. And that, and if they can get a taste of that in that service part, then their appetite is very, very much increased.
Yes. And I keep referencing my home congregation. And don't take that as I'm building us up as we're perfect, because we got a whole slew of problems, but it's the one I know the most about. But one of the things that pleases me most about the group I've been blessed with is when we have a visitor, I usually have to wait between 20 and 25 minutes to speak to that visitor because everyone else has gotten there first. And you don't know what an impression that has on people when they walk in. We've gotten several new members who said, we went to another congregation and no one visited with us. We knew that wasn't where we wanted to be. Takes a little effort. Takes effort. Little things. Anybody else? Brad.
I think a lot of us in small congregations get caught up occasionally thinking we're struggling to keep the doors open. And I think if you ever get in that mindset, you will be struggling to keep the doors open until
you
close the doors, probably.
That's right. That's self-fulfilling prophecy.
I mean, I always think we can preach people into the church. And if you can get people to the building, oh, you're going to save them. Well, it didn't work in most of our families. Why would it work with our friends? And we need to... I think most of us have been taught that it was kind of the church's duty, or the, when the evangelist came twice a year, that would do it, but 0.5% didn't do it. So.
Yeah, and maybe that used to be a little more true than it is now. I don't know, but it's sure not true now. And I think for men to come in and instruct the congregation and teach topics that are maybe deeper than we normally get, that has a very positive place. I'm very much in favor of it. I went through a period in my life where I thought it was kind of silly, but I was wrong. It's not. It's very appropriate. But it doesn't do what we're talking about. That's my point. Richard?
It appears to me that you may not be terribly original in this, because as I look through this list, it seemed to follow quite well the pattern of Jesus with the woman at the well.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. We didn't get to these new texts. But you remember Zacchaeus? Jesus just walks by and he points up in the tree and says, hey, we need to talk. I mean, he didn't go through steps 1 through 7. He did what John said. You know, there's different ways. You get back to just do it. Just do it. There is no reason any congregation represented here should die out. Absolutely no excuse, or no reason for that. It'll happen, but it needn't not happen. Real quick, Dave. Dave is taking your break time.
I was just going to mention one thing we've noticed with Shannon is she comes from a broken home, and one of the things she's thrilled about is being around the family environment and that kind of stuff, and the church people are so close to each other, so it's amazing how the little things show up.
Some of you may know Randy and Laura Techmeyer. He's a deacon at our group. Laura came from a broken home. The thing that absolutely astounded and enthralled her about the church was the love of the family. You're dismissed.